You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us this cold winter evening. I hope you had a lovely weekend and a peaceful and love-filled Christmas, folks. And I am glad to be back with you tonight. And I'm glad you're back with us tonight. Today is Monday. It is the 27th of December in the year 2004. And our spiritual message tonight, I just happened to open the Holy Bible, and this is where it opened to, so this, it's one that I had highlighted, but I don't think I've ever done this. I'm sorry, I have to turn my overhead light on so that I can read this to you. All right, this is from Matthew 15. And this is a statement by Jesus. It's in the red. And he called, this is Matthew 15, beginning with verse 10. And he called the multitude and said unto them, hear and understand. Not that which goes into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. And then his disciples came and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended after they heard this saying? But Jesus answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. Let them alone. They be blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. And Alan Watt is with us tonight again, ladies and gentlemen. And Alan, thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, now that was a good verse, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
I thought so, too, and it just happened to open up to that.
Mm-hmm.
The blind leaders of the blind. I read an email today. In fact, it was on Henry Mackow's, from Henry Mackow's website.
Uh-huh.
He's a Jew, and he has been, it looks to me, it appears to me that he truly is awakening, because he's been exposing a lot of what is going on, and he doesn't seem to be one of those that say, oh, well, we're not Zionist Jews, but yet they still embrace the Talmud and all of the, you know, the everything that goes with that. And,
yeah.
And one article I read, item that he had written, is that his family had disowned him because he was a traitor to his race.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, he had posted this, and he said that he posted it not knowing if it was true or not. But the fact that the man who had made these statements seemed to have so much information that he put it on his website, hoping that, in fact, if there was truth to it, that wide exposure would maybe avert a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And what he was talking about, this actually, it was something that some, quote, German guy wrote. And this German guy claimed that he used to be something of an insider in Germany with the government, and that there were plans. This was, I think, done originally on the 19th of December, and that there were plans by Wolfowitz and his gang to to set off a nuclear explosion in Texas. And he said that they weren't really sure if it was going to be Houston or maybe Atlanta, but somewhere around there. And I read it, Alan, and, you know, as Henry Mackow said, you know, this guy might be a provocateur. He didn't use that word, but this might be just to cause more anxiety and fear. And yet there was a ring of truth in what this guy was saying.
Uh-huh.
And it occurs to me that the faster people are waking up, the faster they seem to be moving.
Well, yeah, they have to. There's a lot to do yet in a fairly short period of time. So they have to, if they begin to lose public interest in their agenda, then they'll have to create something to get them on board, as they say.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, I mean, they've been crying wolf for so long now, with different alerts and terror alerts, etc., that the public eventually will go to sleep.
Oh, yes, and then just once people finally settle down and quit, you know, going into hysteria or fear and anxiety and just start saying, oh, it's just another one of them, it strikes me that it's their modus operandi, that as soon as people take a kind of a sigh of relief and say, oh, well, it's all smoke and mirrors, look, I'm like on 911. There wasn't a clue.
Yeah.
It wasn't a clue. You just woke up one morning, and there it was.
Sure. Yeah. Although it was in line with their agenda, and by the law of averages, I mean, it seems to be that every major catastrophe in the world happens in the direction that they want it to happen. Yeah.
Well, yes, and that's why I guess this had a ring of truth to it to me. I mean, the provocateurs, the controlled opposition, are very good. And usually when I read that stuff, I don't even finish reading it. I read a little portion and then just delete.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I took the time to read this. And it, like I said, there was a ring of truth. And even if it didn't occur, it doesn't mean that something that dastardly isn't in the plans.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the fact is, I mean, as far as the agenda goes, nothing must stop it, and anything which aids it will be done if required, regardless of the cost. That's a human life.
Oh, yes.
And that is the agenda. I think it was in the Grand Chessboard that Brzezinski put out in 98 that he went through the agenda, basically, beginning with Afghanistan, then Iraq, then Iran and Syria, and that coincided with the New American Century agenda that Wolfowitz and Pearl and a few others had put together. Actually, it was put together in the early 90s, and then revamped in about 96, updated a little bit. But they're going full out to accomplish that New American Century agenda, and that's to force the one system worldwide on the few countries remaining who don't have this form of democracy, as they call it.
As their democracy.
Yeah, the central bank, the same schooling system to get the same education so that we're uniformly trained worldwide, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about.
The new man, the Soviet, Homo Sovieticus.
Uh-huh. Basically, it is a Soviet-type
system.
Yes, it is.
Yes, we talked about that, and I've referred to this book many times, Cogs in the Wheel, by Mikhail Heller, and that is exactly what they were doing in the Soviet Union for those 60 years when, you know, nobody could get in, nobody could get out.
Yeah.
And they said that they had created a new species of man. It took millions of years for man to reach Homo sapien. And it took them only 60 short years to create an entirely new species, and they call it Homo Sovieticus, Soviet man, or the new man. And in the book, it explains that that is the blueprint that is being carried out around the world.
Oh, it is. We're being standardized. Everything is being standardized. And you listen to news broadcasts from the BBC, and then you turn to Radio Beijing with these English-speaking
Oh, they all have the same accent, though.
Yes, and they all basically talk the same way about the same things. And if you're not careful, you won't realize that you're actually listening to Radio Beijing, because what you're hearing is what the BBC gives out, which is declarations from different departments of government. You know, the department of this has decreed, etc., etc.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I grew up with that in Britain, listening to that stuff.
And Alan?
Yeah.
The British accent that they have
mm-hmm.
is a little bit different
mm-hmm.
than what I have heard, the British accent. It's almost like a new accent that they've created for these announcers.
Yes, it's a transatlantic accent. That's what they call it.
Transatlantic?
Yep, it's partly American, partly English, Oxford English.
I see.
Mixed together for the new world, basically. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, they're all being trained, regardless if they're from China or England, in the same place.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you make of the terrible tsunamis that hit Indonesia?
Well, it's exactly a year since they hit Iran with that earthquake. It was, and they called it BAM. The place was called BAM, B-A-M. Like out of the comic books, you know?
Yes.
When you strike something, they put BAM down.
And it hit BAM.
And now we have this one here hitting, again, countries, or primarily the peoples who are classified as overpopulated by the UN itself. And there are also a lot of Muslim countries involved there, you know.
I have an email here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe a New York Times, and all I saw was the subject, but it said thousands from six different countries have died.
Yes.
How many countries did this include?
Well, basically...
Well, they said six, but do you know which
one? They don't know yet, because... from the epicenter, the tidal waves traveled over 4,000 miles in all directions.
Is that normal?
Well, this is an incredibly large underwater plate shift, basically. So, no, we don't have these ones all the time.
Well,
know.
They said that this area, that the tsunamis are almost unheard of
mm-hmm.
in this area. And also, there's an AP article. I just once again read the headline, but I actually read a couple of paragraphs of it, and they said that the governments or whatever did not, they knew it was coming, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
This was an AP article,
yeah.
And that no warning was given, and their excuse was that they didn't have the technology. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So in other words, as you read that, you see these creatures or the minions of the creatures sitting high and dry,
mm-hmm.
knowing that this huge tidal wave is going to come and kill hundreds, maybe hundreds of thousands by the time it's over.
Yeah, because they still have millions homeless now, and no fresh drinking water. It'll all be contaminated for a long time. And, of course, food shortages, and a lot of children that can't survive on their own.
Yes.
So this could end up in the millions, you know.
Yeah, why don't you talk here for just a minute? I'll be right back. Okay?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, this is an odd thing to happen at this time when they are talking about overpopulation. Years ago, most of the Western world's governments had departments working on methods of depopulating areas, and they called it quiet weapons for silent, or silent weapons for quiet wars.
Yes.
And of course, something that could be put down to either weather abnormalities or underground tectonic shifts fall right into that category, because they did experiment and have many meetings on creating disasters by exploding atomic weapons in these large crevasses, basically, underneath the sea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What I wanted to... I grabbed a book,
mm-hmm.
and I've shared this with our listeners before, but we have new listeners, and in case there's anybody who doubts that this could have been caused by man, this little book is from the UN. It's Basic Facts About the United Nations. I ordered it right from the UN in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And on page... they're going down a list of different treaties that had been important first steps in the form of international arms control agreements, etc. And in 1977, listen, folks, this is called the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. It's called the ENMOD Convention. Now listen to this. This was in 77. They had the technology then and working. It prohibits the use of techniques that would have widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects through deliberate manipulation of natural processes and cause such phenomena as earthquakes, tidal waves, and changes in climate and in weather patterns. It prohibits the use, not the research. So this technology has been available for that many years already. And as Alan said, many times when they talk about technology they have, it's old news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've had it for a long time. And yet, because it's still in a sort of secret mode from the public, they can use it, and as long as there is that slight possibility or plausibility that this is just a weather phenomenon, most of the public will accept that. You know?
And isn't it interesting, they specifically, in this little overview, mentioned earthquakes, tidal waves, etc.
Yeah, and that's just the High Altitude Auroral Research Program, the HAARP project. It not only can it shift the jet stream, which it has definitely done for the last week, but it can also cause the earthquakes. That's right, yeah. And it can also create hurricanes or tornadoes offshore and bring them anywhere inland.
Yeah.
And that's all in the treaties, you know.
Yes. When hurricane season was ravaging Florida, I read an item to our listeners from Tom Bearden or Reardon Bearden, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not so sure about who he really is,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that a lot of his information is accurate. And basically he gave a very lay person's explanation of how they can steer hurricanes
yeah.
wherever they want them to go.
Sure, yeah. Well, for the last week, they showed a weather pattern on the weather forecast every night. And we saw the jet stream basically crossing through Mexico, doubling back, going up the west coast of Canada, up to Alaska, and then in this clockwork wise motion, it was coming down and through Nova Scotia on the east coast in a perfect circle, and then ending up through Louisiana and joining itself again. And for a whole week, they showed this big circle going around the continent.
You know, you were telling me about that last evening,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I wasn't actually picturing as you were talking how wide a circle that thing made.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right, because we were getting -45 degrees below freezing here. That's how cold it was up here. And of course, by the time that went over land and right down to Louisiana way to join itself, it was freezing rain. But this literally affected the whole continent. And on the first night they showed this strange phenomena, the weather forecast on the local station did say that the jet stream was doing a very odd thing. And he never mentioned that again, of course, because he must have been told.
They probably were told. Leave your comments to yourself.
Yeah, that's how it's done. And, well, and as long as it's presented, and just read the weather off as they normally do, even if you're seeing pink clouds, it'll make no difference, because most people will not think for themselves
right.
anymore.
Unless they hear a comment like that from a weather person.
Exactly.
That would make
yeah.
them stop to think. I can remember during a hurricane when the last one, named,
mm-hmm.
what the heck was its name? Anyway, I heard on the Weather Channel their expert talking about the different hurricanes.
Yeah.
And then he went way down south there to that last one,
mm-hmm.
and he said this is the furthest south that a hurricane or that a tropical storm has ever been mm-hmm. named for a hurricane. In other words, the way what I was hearing was that they knew what they were going to do
yeah.
with that tropical storm that was so far south. They had never done it before. Because
mm-hmm.
if it was natural weather, it could have just worn itself out before it did any damage whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of the spraying of the skies is all part of the HAARP project, because the metallic particles and the barium, which they're spraying, basically is making the air more conductive to electromagnetic mm-hmm. energy. And so they can certainly amplify the effects of it. And ultimately, I think they probably go in the same direction that Brzezinski also talked about in the technotronic era, where people's minds will be affected by this kind of technology. They can make you placid or angry or whatever they want you to feel by using electromagnetic pulses at certain frequencies.
Frequencies that match the brain frequencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Begich was on a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and in his book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, he did address that.
Yeah.
And they actually have experimented with it. And besides giving people mood swings,
mm-hmm.
depression, anger, sometimes euphoria, they can actually cause homicidal or suicidal,
yeah.
thoughts, emotions that
sure.
get so deep that yeah. people go off the deep end.
And then you couple that in with a guy from the same clique that was Aldous Huxley, and he gave a speech at Berkeley University in, I think, 67.
Uh-huh.
And he said that, most people simply aren't happy. And researchers such as the Tavistock Institute, which he worked for, had been busily working to find a new soma drug or something that would make people feel happy, regardless of what they actually worked at in real life.
Actually, Alan.
Yeah.
It seems to me that those drugs,
mm-hmm.
from what I know of them, really don't create emotions unless it's deeper depression,
mm-hmm.
but that it mostly takes people's emotions, it eliminates emotions. So maybe when he said the drug Soma,
mm-hmm.
or something like Soma, they do have a drug named Soma out,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
but that it would make them happy, maybe what he really meant was it would make them happy.
I mean, this is all to do with control.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line with all governments and then the super government. It's all about control and how to get the public from where they are now into this new society, which will be completely new. A culture, everything, a way of doing things will all be different. It will be a planned society.
Yeah.
An organized society where there is no free will, really. There will be laws for everything and permits for everything in the next phase that's coming up, and that won't be the final phase. Cloning eventually will be the norm down the road, and those ones who are compliant are the ones who will be cloned, you know.
Yeah, you were telling me about a program they have now that they're actually cloning pets for people.
Yeah, right out of that Schwarzenegger movie where I think it started off with the little girl's pet being cloned because it died.
Which Schwarzenegger movie?
The Sixth Day or something it was
okay.
called. And then ultimately, of course, he was cloned in the movie too. But they had a shopping mall where you just went in with a sample of your pet's DNA and they would clone your pet. And lo and behold, it was announced at the weekend that a lady in the U.S., and they wouldn't disclose her name, naturally, but she had just got a duplicate of her cat made. Her cat had just died. And sure enough, she had the money, she had the bucks, and they cloned a kitten for her. An identical replica of her cat.
And of course, if that doesn't work, we'll never hear about it.
That's right. Uh-huh.
You led us right into something that I would like you to talk about, and because they use entertainment.
Oh, yes.
They use entertainment to get us used to something, accepting of something,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes, as you've said, just to mock the victims.
Yeah.
They tell us exactly what they're doing or what they intend to do.
Yeah.
And this is something, you know, in the book that what's his name wrote, John, whatever, the Committee of 300.
Coleman. Yeah.
John Coleman, thank you, the former MI5 or MI6 guy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like there's such a thing. Anybody listening, folks, he's done some very good work. And again, there are hooks in them. I have an audio tape of a talk that he was doing to a group, for a group. And what he had said to this group is that he was ejected from England with only the clothes on his back, and he came to America. You know, that is so phony, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, when he was on the air with us, I asked him about that, and he denied it was him.
Oh.
I mean, it said right on the audio tape, Dr. John Coleman, and you could hear the voice. You could recognize the voice.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't want to admit that he said that because it's such a blatant, you know, and first of all, there's no such thing as a former CIA, MI6, mm-hmm. or any of those.
Yeah.
But anyway, in his book, he did mention, you know, the beginning of the end, if you would, with the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
And that their music, and they were lifted, you know, into the spotlight to, and I would like you to address this because I'm not sure what function it was that they were to serve,
mm-hmm.
but that was when they began in the 60s, really making drastic changes in the, quote, culture.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the fact that the Beatles never wrote one of their songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall you telling us that before, and I'd like you to address it.
Yeah. Okay, well, even leading up to that, you have to go into the 1800s, because they'd already experimented with different kinds of music to find out how it affected people, primarily the young. And they were going into disharmonic types of music, discords, that type of thing, which made certain audiences angry even, you know. And then in the early 1900s, and plus remember, in the late 1800s, guys like H.G. Wells were pushing for free love, as they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to destroy the current society and family by promoting promiscuity.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that the earlier children start, the less likelihood there will be of a bonding on any permanent basis down through their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties, during the illicit booze era, which made it more daring to go into the booze cans and have parties, etc., they came out with jazz. Now, jazz had already been tested in the Soviet system and further developed to find its effects on young people. And so they mixed it with drugs and so on. And they came out with the miniskirt in the 1920s for the Charleston dance. And sure enough, you know, you bring young people into the booze cans, miniskirts, dancing, and pretty strong booze, and they ended up with lots and lots of unwanted pregnancies. And because they didn't have, and venereal diseases, and because they didn't have the pill at that time, it sort of faded away. Orphanages blossomed to take care of all the excess children that were unwanted, and the clinics were full of people with syphilis, etc. And so that faded away, and from the 30s onwards, the scientists in the West worked fervently on ways of fighting sexually transmitted disease such as syphilis, and to find a way of birth control.
Oh, so that they could continue their
and voila, you know, when they had it all, including the psychedelic drugs to go with it, which they'd also experimented with.
Alan, excuse me.
They gave you the pop era.
Okay, let's hold it right there because we're taking our 60-second break here.
Okay.
Folks, we'll be right back with Alan Watt. Please get your pen in hand so that you can take my address down if you would like to see the Sweet Liberty broadcast continue. Those of you who are, thank you. Those of you who aren't, you're invited. We'll be right back.
what in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the door.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Yes, thank you for your continued support, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to give you my address one more time, just in case you didn't get it, and remind you, please, to understand, when it says that Sweet Liberty is listener-supported, it doesn't mean that we have a patron someplace that is paying the cost here. It's $165 an hour to do the broadcast. And in order to keep it on the air, it will be you, our listeners, who will continue to support it. And for those of you, as I said, who are not and would like to keep the information coming, you are invited to become a participating listener sponsor. My address, once again, is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, and that is M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. Alan Watt is with us, and I want to remind you, too, that Alan has two booklets available, working on a third. And the booklets are something out of this world. No, they're in this world, but out of our realm of ever knowing information. And it isn't just Alan writing, although he does write to explain photocopies of pages from old books that just aren't available to us. And if you would like to get them, the books are $20 a piece. And you can get them. Take Alan's address down. $20 includes the shipping and handling. And I'll tell you what, I know that the shipping costs, the mailing costs, are going up astronomically. The address would be Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, and it is Site 41, Box 4, Astaire, Ontario. Astaire is like up the stairway. E-S-T-A-I-R-E. Yes, Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, Astaire, Ontario. And the postal code is P, as in Petrou or Paul, Peter, P3-C-Charlie-4. Peter 3, oh, E4, excuse me, Edward 4, Nancy 1. P3E4N1, and the last line has to be Canada. And our post mistress informed me that the new postal requirements, regulations in Canada, if you want to get information to Alan, and why, by the way, don't send a check and don't send a U.S. money order, but send an either FRNs or an international money order. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to use it. And Canada would be the last on your line. And you have to have your full name and address, return address, or it will be rejected. Now, if you want to make up a name or whatever, that's up to you, but they're not going to accept initials or a last name or et cetera. So it's getting closer and closer to the Soviet style, I guess you would say. Once again, his address, Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, P3E4N1, Canada. And it's $20 a piece. And Alan has said that if you are on a limited income and truly want the information, not just because it would be something cheap or free, but that you send what you can and you will get the books. So I do trust you folks that you will send $20 if you can afford the $20. And Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, where were we just before? Okay, you were talking about how this led up to what we're going to talk about with the Beatles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you had gotten through the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah.
And they came up with the pill, and they came up with a fix for the venereal diseases.
Yeah.
And then where?
And again, the miniskirt, same thing, you know. And
in the 60s, yes.
Yeah. And
and I must admit, I was one of the wearers of miniskirts.
Yeah. And a whole new type of music just aimed at young people to get them going. And it was sex was plied openly. And it was strange because in the BBC, which was the only television station in Britain at that time, and it's run by the government, you know, and at that time every employee of the BBC had to come from Eton for security reasons. So basically these were minor aristocracies running the BBC. And what I noticed when I was small, watching all this stuff, saying, I thought, well, these people, why are the elites giving you a debased culture? Because it was very evident with the shows we were putting on for young people, at taxpayers' expense, by the way, you know, this is all funded by the taxpayer. The elite were giving you a culture which would obviously destroy the culture you already had. And, of course, that's what it was intended to do. And sure enough, they gave you the flower power era, the rock groups, the free love, the pill. At the same time, they began to push for abortion clinics because there was still a lot of girls who didn't go on the pill. And so they got the abortion clinics through, covertly at first and then openly. And sure enough, we see today that very few marriages have a chance of lasting more than 3 to 5 years. You know, promiscuity.
That the what? Say that again.
The chances of marriage today.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
And promiscuity definitely has been a big part of it. And they knew in the 1800s that if they could get the children committing sexual acts before even puberty, if possible, then there's less likelihood that they would bond for life with a partner down the road. And that's proven to be true. And during the early 1900s, Bertrand Russell, Lord Bertrand Russell, another member of the aristocracy, had his own experimental schools in Britain where he was promoting this very thing to see how they could change children as they grew up. So it had been tested in smaller areas, smaller controlled groups, before it was let loose on the world. And so they knew exactly how to do it and what the effects would be. So there's nothing ever just blast onto the scene by mm-hmm. itself. It's all programmed.
Very, very carefully and long time planned.
Yeah, and then when the Beatles, of course, burst forth, with probably more money behind them promoting them than anybody had ever had before. And so they were famous before anybody really actually heard them.
Yeah, okay, thank you. But now, you know, when I listen to or hear old Beatles songs, they seem so innocent.
Yeah.
And so will you explain what function did the Beatles serve and their music?
You have to listen to the words, number one.
Well, I have.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a long day's night and mm-hmm. da-da-da and, oh, hey, Jude.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've listened to the words.
Mm-hmm.
And only it's been a while. Maybe I would hear something different, but...
Yeah, if you listen to...
Can you think of something?
Yeah, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Okay.
LSD, you know.
Oh, okay.
and tangerine. Mind you, we're seeing the tangerine skies now with the spraying, you know. But, they put the drug message, and all the top groups put drug messages through.
But if people don't understand what that means, how does it get to them?
Oh, they knew
Lucy
what it meant.
Lucy in the sky. Well,
you'd be amazed how quickly children figure things out, you know.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Yep. And
you remember Pop the Magic Dragon?
Oh, yeah.
That was supposed to be about, marijuana.
Yeah.
I thought it was a cool song.
That's right.
And I would have never thought about what they said that it means.
And it's the same with Burl Ives, you know. Burl Ives before sang the Big Rock Candy Mountain, and it was about homosexual pedophilia. It was an in joke with all of the guys who understood it. And this goes on all the time.
So how does this affect the listeners if they don't consciously understand what the words mean?
It's surprising how much of an effect through subconscious listening. Your subconscious can actually understand more than sometimes your conscious mind, because your conscious is trying to scan things. It's very busy scanning things to censor out those things it doesn't like or whatever. But if your defenses are down and you're not scanning it, it goes right into the subconscious, and your subconscious can figure things out much more quickly. And the magazines as well that they bombarded all the youth with at that time also contained a lot of the messages and explained to the children what these things meant.
Oh, okay.
Like the Rolling Stones magazine.
Oh,
you know.
Sure, there you go.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Rolling Stones magazine was very popular, wasn't it?
Sure, oh yeah. So sure, you definitely have... it was a planned, orchestrated blitz, basically, on the public. There were limousines going around universities, guys getting out and throwing big, you know, like garbage bags of LSD over the walls. This is all free LSD to get the LSD culture going. And that's how they started it. They were literally throwing bags over the walls for free. And so this was an orchestrated blitz, you know. And even on the BBC, on the Top of the Pops, as they called it, the shows that they gave you, they joked about this kind of thing going on as though it was all fun, and how you know, tongue in cheek this was. It was all fun. And again, I thought, well, you know, Britain has probably had more control over its people. That's why they're called subjects. Than any other culture in the West. Why would the elite not only be allowing this, but actually be the ones doing it? It was so evident, because nothing was published in Britain unless the elite authorized it. So this is coming from the top.
And you were telling me about the writer of all the Beatles songs.
Yes.
And today, what's his name? That owns the company.
Michael Jackson bought the rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, well, the Beatles appeared on the BBC once again in the late 60s, and they all said that they were broke. And when they were asked why they were broke, there was a silence. They wouldn't explain, looked at each other sort of knowingly, and no one knew at that time why these guys would be broke. Well, it turned out that they did not own the rights to supposedly their songs, and never had. And then in the early 80s, Theo Adorno, who was the actual owner of those songs, died, and the songs went up for sale. And Paul McCartney at that time put a bid in alongside Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson won the bid. And he now owns the rights to the Beatles songs. So the Beatles never have owned the titles of those songs. So
and they never wrote one of their songs?
I think maybe some of the little drug-induced ditties, I call them, the simplistic stuff, you know, they may have added a bit here and there, but the big ones, no, they didn't, no. And you can tell by the words, too, that someone much older had written them. apart from the fact that much of the music could only have been done by someone who'd studied classical music. And Theo Adorno was a professor of music.
If somebody knew classical music, well, they would know that.
Yes.
Because I didn't know it.
Even simple guitarists, if they look at the types of chord schemes and so on and tempo changes, this is beyond your typical three-chord wonder that you know of so well. And but Theo Adorno was one of the best professors, really, in Germany for many years in all kinds of music, mainly classical. And he came over to Britain and headed the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and he was best friends with the Queen of England. And he definitely worked with Martin, who was the producer for the records and for the Beatles. And I've no doubt at all it was him who wrote them, because he certainly owned the rights of the songs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
And what was their function?
The function again was to as I say, change society, change culture. Plato had said it thousands of years ago that by his rights, as he said, we should control music very strictly because it affects the minds of the young. And so they knew from thousands of years ago how the effects can be on the young. And they also knew that if they wanted to give you to create a generation that would go to war, you'd give them marching type songs and tunes. And if you wanted to degenerate a culture, you give them lots of sensual music. And
uh-huh.
And so this was meant to destroy what was in order to create that which might be, as they say in high masonry.
What was for what might be.
Yeah.
I want to mention this, and I may have done this, but I want to mention it again just in case I didn't. A few weeks ago, I got a call from a friend and said, oh, I'm watching this really beautiful movie on ABC, and it's titled The Five People You'll Meet in Heaven. And as soon as he said ABC, I thought, well, there's something real wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gave my sis a call. It was after the broadcast. Asked her what she was doing, and she said, oh, I'm watching the most precious movie. And it was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came on again, I was able to tape it and watch it. And basically, and there was some. And see, this is how, folks, I'm saying this so that you will be aware of this. Something that touches your heart, that reaches in, the truth. There were some very beautiful parts to that movie that would touch you. But knowing that it was ABC, I was very clear that there was some message there, something. There was a hook. And basically what I saw, for the most part, was the glorification of war.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to mention this because, once again, they're using entertainment and they're using our love and our compassion and our desire for truth, for spiritual truth, to get their message across. And that's exactly what I saw in it, Alan.
Yes, they use natural tribal instincts and bring them to the fore. Because we, regardless of the era we live in, we still have innate tribal instincts. And they're the same instincts that are employed by mammals, all higher mammals. And that's why they've studied so much of mammalian life forms, to find out what are the easiest direct roads to affect humans. And sure enough, you know, they know exactly what buttons to push. And it's no coincidence that for the last 20 years, they've degenerated the music down to its most primitive form to create a culture and a generation that would go off to war and be the new barbarians.
It's their duty.
Yes.
It's honor.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, that is exactly what they were. Even though they showed the horrors of war,
mm-hmm.
they did flashbacks of this guy who went to heaven and and one of his old army buddies was there, and it was terrible what they showed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, while they were showing you the horrors of war, they were instilling
mm-hmm.
in people, unsuspecting people, that it's our duty.
Yes.
It's for honor.
Mm-hmm.
We do this for our country.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, you have a bunch, or a clique, basically running your country, and thousands of think tanks working fervently on ways to control the minds of the young to make them go off and fight in these wars.
And if they can't get enough of them to do it, they'll set off a nuclear bomb.
Yes, and they'll bring in the draft, yeah.
Yes.
But they have created the youngsters have got their values from the state and from media, as Bertrand Russell promised would eventually happen, because they've all been brought up with kindergarten, teachers and so on. And Bertrand Russell said that in the 1920s. He says, we won't have to take the children from the parents at birth through experimentation. He said, we've found that we can inculcate values in the children if we even have them for only 4 or 5 hours a day at kindergarten age.
Yes.
And so the moral values of the parents will be of no consequence.
And I have read a lot of the research on the brain research that they've done.
Uh-huh.
And for they said from the ages, well, from a time a child is born up until the age of 9,
yeah,
that their brain is actually literally exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And all these new synapses are being created.
Yeah.
And that the child continues to learn after the age of 9, but up until that time, their learning curve is just
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
And they want that child as young as they can and get the child.
Yeah.
So those early years, folks, in schools, in preschools, any preschool today, as far as I am aware, has to meet with state and federal standards. And in order to do that, then there's certain propaganda, certain techniques that they have to use. So if you have a child or a grandchild, niece or nephew that's in preschool, and think it's so wonderful, think again. Think again. And as long as you can keep your children out of those damn government indoctrination centers, because if you think that what you're going to try to get them at home is going to do any good, their techniques are down to a fine, fine art, and the technology today that your values that you would like to instill can be erased in an afternoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a perfect art today, actually,
Oh, it is. It's,
yeah.
I know that. One of the things that we were going to discuss and we haven't is the report that you were telling me about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you would come back with us tomorrow evening.
Sure, yeah.
If you would do that, I would like you to zero in on that
mm-hmm.
Tomorrow and share it with our listeners because, once again, it is relevant. And, folks, I want you to know, I've had comments from listeners, and not comments from people that say, oh, why are you bringing Alan Watt on all the time? Most of them are, pleased to have Alan back again. But it's been suggested that if I have Alan on all the time, it'll become the Alan Watt program. I don't really, how can I say this? I don't care who it is that is presenting the information to you that I believe is relevant. And if I had a guest on every single night that was doing the presenting, if I believe that was relevant and that it could make a difference, I would do that. Because where I fit in this broadcast, in my mind, in my heart, I am a seeker of truth. I am very clear that of all that I have learned, that what I have learned is the tip of an iceberg. And so, therefore, it is an open process, an ever-unfolding process. And I bring Alan Watt on with us because he has an insight and a gift, a talent that I see that I want to be able to share with you. And so Alan will be back with us again tomorrow night. And there's some stuff that I want to share with you, So on Wednesday, probably, unless something comes up, I will save it until then and have Alan back tomorrow night. We've got a couple minutes left, Alan. Do you want to give your phone number?
Sure.
In case there are listeners that would like to get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure.
All right. 705. And I get that last part mixed up because it's so like my sister's.
Uh-huh.
What is it?
The last part of the phone.
705. Yeah. Is it 659 or?
Hold on.
Alan, oh, please.
Yeah, well, I have to. Here we are. I got it here.
I've got it in my book, but
yeah.
I don't have it memorized.
I've got it tattooed on my wrist here. Hold on. It's 705-695.
Six, 695, okay.
0416.
Oh, 416. I remember that.
Yeah.
My sister's is 569.
Oh, okay.
So that just hasn't clicked in my mind yet. Alan, if now, folks, listen, you want to check with your long-distance service to see what your rates to Canada are if money is an issue with you, because I know one of our listeners had checked and it was like 15 cents a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to try to get on OneSuite. For those of you who have internet access, there is a wonderful phone service, and you can write this down if you want. I don't get anything from recommending this, but we've been using it now for over 3 years. It's 2.9 cents per minute. There's no taxes added on. There's no connect fee. You have to use a credit card. It is onesuite.com, onesuite.com, and you can make calls in the United States and to Canada for 2.9 cents per minute, and that's very reasonable. And that way, at least when you call, you won't find yourself with a horrendous phone bill like I did one time, Alan.
Yeah, well, it's the wonders of modern technology.
Yeah, all right. Well, we're out of our hour here. And, folks, we will be back with you tomorrow night with Alan Watt. Of course, barring any unforeseen events, thank you for joining us this evening. And have a lovely one, what's left of it. Sweet dreams tonight. And God bless you, folks, each and every one of you. And good night. Good night, Alan.
Good night.
Thank you.
To Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are the...